This podcast was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great local podcasts, go on our website freshfm.net or download the accessmedia.nz app.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is Chris Stewart. Chris spent many years working for humanitarian organisations before returning to New Zealand and is currently living in Nelson. Her debut novel, For Reasons of Their Own, was published recently. Welcome to Top Writers, Chris, and congratulations on your first novel.
Oh, thank you.
Could you please tell us what the novel is about without any spoilers?
Thank you. I've written a crime novel set in Australia. And it's about a detective, rather bruised female detective, who comes across and manages a dead body. And she's working within an organisation that is desperate to misuse this dead body for its own particular purposes. And it's a novel that when you close the last page, that hopefully you'll have a lot to think about.
Why a crime novel?
Yeah, that was a good question that I asked myself. I never thought I would actually ever write a crime, and I don't know where it popped up. Originally, this background of the humanitarian world was going to be a semi-biography, but after my first attempt at writing about me, I decided I wasn't really interesting enough. And then I thought perhaps I could get the story told in a different way and with deeper meaning and different characters if I broadened it into a crime novel. And that's what happened.
Right. Is this a novel you always wanted to write, or did it just one day pop into your head like a eureka moment?
No. It's a novel. I've always wanted to write a novel set in the humanitarian world, because obviously when I first went into this field after the first Gulf War, people didn't really know a lot about the Middle East, and it was a very disconnected place. And, you know, I was sort of in that area for 20 years. So I remember actually when I first wanted to write a book, and a friend encouraged me, and I remember saying, who wants to read about Muslims? Because no one was really interested. And this was, you know, this was 20 years ago. So it wasn't until some of those books that came out, like Not Without My Veil, that suddenly there was a bit more of interest in what was happening with the Islamic world and countries that seemed so far out of our orbit. So yes, it's been a 20-year dream to write a novel.
Did you write it full time or?
I did. I actually had to give up work for it, because if you've read it, it's a little bit, it's not complicated, but there are many different elements. It's not straightforward. And I mean, it's interesting. It twists and turns and ducks and weaves is what our life does. So what was the question again? I've ducked and weaved.
Yeah, did you write for?
Yes, I did write. I had tried writing earlier, but you know, most of my jobs overseas consumed my every waking moment, and I just didn't have any headspace. So I actually knew to write a book, I was going to have to do it full time, which is what I did.
Now, there are lots of underlying themes apart from the murder. Would you like to talk a bit about those?
The murder's just the catalyst, really, for the relationships that occur, you know, that occur around. And I, you know, the book brings out overt racism within Australian society, within organisations that are supposed to be the ones that uphold it. It talks about corruption, you know, within organisations. It talks about, you know, our concept of borders and what it means. I have a lovely Aboriginal man in it who suffers terribly from bigotry. And I think the other key theme that I wanted to really pull out in the book was the notion of what it means to be safe. And I don't want to give too much away, but it does challenge our notion of, you know, how safe we are in this global world, this new global world we're facing.
Yeah, it's quite timely, actually, especially with the Black Lives Matter movement and that, because you bring up a lot of the issues that they are. And we all know how badly the Aboriginal people have been treated in Australia. Why did you set it in Melbourne?
When I was working as an aid worker, I often did contract work for, you know, 1 or 2 years. And at that stage, I could always come back to Melbourne and pick up some casual work as a nurse. I used to work in emergency departments in between. I could never do that here very easily in New Zealand. So Melbourne became my kind of safe place to go back to. As a consequence, I got to know Melbourne quite well. I ended up buying a house on the outskirts of Melbourne, which is partly some of the setting for this novel. But yes, that's how I ended up in Australia. And also, when I first went into working for Red Cross, I worked for Australian Red Cross. And so I sort of was over the ditch a bit more than I was actually here.
There is a trend emerging from a lot of recent novelists where it doesn't matter where you set it, details don't have to be correct. It's actually the storyline that's important. Yet your one is very, very realistic because it's set in Melbourne. We've got the train times. We've got all this detail. Would you like to tell us a little about the research that you undertook to make sure everything was correct so that for those that know Melbourne, they know it's definitely Melbourne?
Yeah, actually, people telling me that they walk into the convention centre and they can smell it. and that many of the readers feel that they're on the journey or they're actually present when they're reading it, which is really good for me as an author. I think detail is really important, and I learnt this lesson many years ago when I won a short story competition. And I know I'm digressing, but I was just telling someone the story the other day. I wrote a short story about an Aboriginal man, a young Aboriginal boy, actually, who was unloved and discarded and used to spend quite a bit of his time, and he had nothing to play with, nothing to do, and he used to pick up grains of sand. And I described the boy under the house, mesmerised by grains of sand. And it really got everybody. And I thought, you know, like the whole notion of describing what it is to sort of have grains of sand and put them in order was so detailed and pedantic, but it had such powerful meaning. So I'm really very much into detail. I even have me, and I'm showing the train timetable that I used in front of me, because I think I wanted this novel to be really authentic and as close to the reader as I could be. And I think detail does that.
Thank you. Perhaps you'd like to read us something from the book, please, but not the last page.
Okay, I'm going to actually read the opening, prologue. According to his convictions, this moment was long overdue. Anticipation urged him forward and desire propelled him left and into the bush. The putrid stench from the dying wetlands briefly confused his senses, but he could still smell her fear. Excitement surged through him in palpable waves. He was the master of the hunt and closing in. She was somewhere on his right, tantalisingly, teasingly close. He predicted she wouldn't remain hidden for much longer. A sudden sharp sting on his back forced him to pause and he slapped whatever it was off. As he pushed his way deeper into the bush, he cursed everything poisonous on the continent of Australia. He felt another sting, this time in his lower back. Then another, deep inside and more painful. His knees no longer held him up and he tripped, staggering in ever-decreasing circles. A eucalyptus branch laden with leaves whipped across his face. He tried to grab it, but the twigs slipped through his fingers. Something hot plunged into his neck and his face snapped upwards. Daylight was fading in and out, in rhythm with the rapid thumping in his head. He reeled around and tried to look at the woman, not understanding what was happening to him. She wanted his last memory to be of her face, so she stood still, waited and watched. He turned, struggling to get away from her, but his legs ignored his command. Sliding in the mud, he stumbled backwards and fell across a bark-shaved tree trunk. He willed himself to roll over, to tell her to stop. But no matter how hard he tried, his tongue wouldn't move. He simply couldn't form the words.
Right, that immediately takes us there. It's not there was a dead body. Yeah, and all that detail, we're just there in the moment, which is actually a feature of the book. Once you had the idea for the book, did you just sit down and write from woe to go, or did you plot it out and have post-it notes all around your living room, or...?
A combination of all sorts of things. I did it over a long period of time and I had a lot of different ideas that kept shaping and forming and weaving and then in the end, well, not in the end, actually about halfway through, my characters said to me, I want to go here, I want to do this, I want to do that, and I need to be here. And then, of course, when I edited it, it became sharper and stronger, and then more elements began to emerge. And honestly, I loved it. I loved the process of watching this the story emerge in a different way. I never knew who did it, to be honest, right until I never knew, and I didn't really have in my head who the murderer was, because it made me go to bed at night with anticipation, looking forward to what was going to happen the next day. So it was as much a journey for me. And I think that way, the characters and the reasons and the motives for the murder became so much more real.
So it ended up with the characters writing the book and you just tapping the keys so it came up on the screen.
Yeah, they went to bed with me at night. They woke me up in the middle of the night and they were there in the morning when I got up. I couldn't escape them.
How did you keep track of all the characters and their relevance to the story?
Well, it's a very good question, and often I didn't. So I was very lucky to have a copy editor that taught me about spreadsheets. So I am now a spreadsheet fan, and that was one of the things that was actually quite complex as I was weaving the story in and out with different characters, where they were and what they were doing and how that was going to be. So I'm a fan of spreadsheets now, and I learned a lot about the technical side of writing, the slow and painful way. But I think you have to go through that to understand what your style is or how you want to write.
Right. There are a lot of people that think writers have it cruisy. They just sit down with a cup of coffee, they write this book and it appears on the shelf. Now, you've already alluded to your copy editor and that. Could you talk us through, like, from the beginning, you've got your first manuscript. What happened for you from there?
I think one of the interesting things is someone asked me, you know, you must be so excited to have published a book and it's been out there. Actually, that wasn't the moment. I think the moment for a writer is when you submit your first manuscript to a manuscript assessor, because if you don't get the nod of approval at that stage, forget it.
Yeah.
And I think that for me was the most intense moment and joyous moment of the whole experience, when I got really positive feedback from that manuscript assessment, and it gave me validation and permission to continue. And that's what I wanted, not 1,000 sales or not to be well known, but to be a good writer. And yeah, you know, I ticked the boxes at that stage, and that was really important to me.
So once the book hits the shelves, it's actually relief?
Yes, it is a relief, and everyone writes for different reasons. I mean, I write because I want to tell a story, and I want to tell a good story, and I'd like to be thought of as someone who writes well, as opposed to how many books I sell or whether I get a movie deal down the track.
Now, for me, when I'm looking at books, it's the cover. I know, never judge a book by a cover, but so many people do. Would you like to talk a little about the cover?
That was a very interesting process, because everyone, you know, as a first-time novelist or as a first-time writer, I had to start from scratch learning about everything. So when it came to the cover, I did my research, and the first lesson was never let the author decide what the cover should be. But, you know, I felt very strongly that I wanted to have three messages on my book cover. And for those that are listening to this, you can't see the cover, but the dominant colours are red, blue and black. And the red is really about the sky in Australia. The blue is about passports, because I wanted people to know that this was a book that involved international travel. There's an immigration stamp placed over it, which again, it relates to borders and land. And then there's a crime scene tape that's placed in front of that, just gently, you can hardly see it. I wanted them to pick up the book and know that this was, you know, a very heavily Australian set book. And to all my lovely Kiwi listeners, I'd just like to let you know that the main detective is a Kiwi living in Melbourne. And I've only been back in Nelson 4 years, and it hasn't been long enough for me to find any murky spaces to put any dead bodies. But I have allowed enough space with Robbie to actually perhaps come back here to New Zealand and set a novel back here.
So there are going to be more books?
Definitely. There's a series, yeah.
Now, what?
I hope.
You hope? What have you learned from your first novel that you would do differently next time?
I knew you were going to ask me that question, and I thought about it a lot, and I actually decided there was nothing I would probably change. I think
you spent 20 years learning.
Yeah, I think that I had to go through that. And I can remember, you know, sometimes in life you think, oh, God, that's just, I've just wasted all that time. When I took a year and a half off to write an autobiography, and after that time I put it aside and thought, well, that's the end of that, bottom drawer. But in actual fact, that was the best thing I ever did because it taught me. And so nothing I've learned, I think writers have to go through learning their craft and facing disappointment and doing the hard yards, and because it teaches you not just to be a good writer, but actually how to be a resilient writer and not give up. I think it's very easy. I learned things like writing into the void, which basically means I haven't got a clue what I'm going to write, but I'm going to write anyway.
Right.
And how that actually can be very powerful. So you learn about yourself, you learn your craft, and you learn about life in a very different way.
Right, because your life has certainly been interesting. Now, the song you've chosen today is Phoebe Snow's If I Can Just Get Through the Night. I'm sure you've felt like that on many occasions. Why? What does the song mean to you?
Actually, it was a song that I used to sometimes play when things got really quite tough in my life. And I put this in the book because Robbie at one stage just didn't think she could, she just didn't think she could go, you know, couldn't handle it anymore. Could she actually get through the night? Could she make it to the morning? And so this song was very perfect for her.
Right. We're now going to listen to Phoebe Snow's If I Can Just Get Through the Night.
I started seeing double, got myself concerned. Headed right for trouble, and I got nowhere to turn. I can always give it up tomorrow, lose my sorrow in the morning light. Gonna give it up tomorrow. I've got to live it up tonight. If I can show. Darling, I would hold me tight.
so much, Chris, for talking with us today, and congratulations on your debut novel, For Reasons of Their Own. The book is available from Page and Blackmore, Amazon, and also from Chris personally on www.chrisstewart, all one word, and Stewart is S-T-U-A-R-T, dot New Zealand.
And Amazon is an e-book on Kindle.
I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. A podcast of this program and upcoming events can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Media Project. Other great podcasts from Fresh FM are available through the accessmedia.nz app or our website freshfm.net.